my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 433, to be broadcast on Wednesday, May 28th, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can always comment down here below. I'll see what I can do about that. Or you can reach out to me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel, which is almost up to date, I think. Anyway, Ron's rant of the week. The Ride of Silence. It was last Wednesday. It was a bust. I'm a little disappointed. Where were you? We didn't get a lot of people to show up. Big shout out to Bob, who showed up. Kevin, of course, who's been an organizer of this for years. Big shout out to him. And also huge shout out to the Yukon Police Department for showing up and helping us with the event. Very poor turnout this year. You know, I talk a lot about advocacy on this show. I talk a lot about what you can do to become part of the solution. And you know, when I get disappointing results like that, I get a little aggravated. But anyway, I'll leave it at that. Better luck next year. Hopefully things will be a little better. I will admit that we had some cool weather. We didn't have perfect weather for it by any means, but still very disappointing that people don't care that much about cycling. Anyway, I know you care about cycling. I'm just feeling like you had a chance to say something and you didn't do it. So hopefully you'll do something else in advocacy this year to contribute your part to the cause, and that would be a really good thing. Okay, the bicycle helmet debate rages on as a study finds that views that cyclists wearing safety gear as less human. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the show. And then machines took over cities and left humans in the dust. Yeah, more stuff we can talk about in as we get into the show. Let's go on to the... there's so many things to rant about. Three Consumer Product Safety Commission commissioners were suing Trump over termination. Sure, we don't need safety, right? Well, anyway, we do. And we'll talk about that more in the show. On the positive side, it's May. It's bike month. That's a beautiful thing, right? It's still bike month. We're almost done. But you know what it also is? It's Memorial Day weekend. So thank you to all who have served or have family who have served. Appreciate your service. And also, it's the Giro rest day again. Here we are. It's the end of week two. And the rest day is today, yesterday, once again. Another great day in cycling. This Giro has been just over the top. It's been a really, really, really good Giro. Yesterday, it was a reason why I love bicycle racing so much. First of all, Del Toro is still in the pink. Not supposed to be, but there he is. And why do I love bike racing so much? A domestique won yesterday. Carlos Verona of Little Trek took a heartwarming solo victory on the pulsating stage 15 of the Giro d'Italia and may spell the end of Primo Roglic's shot at a second Maya Rosa, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. He lost a whole bunch of time on a climb. Anyway, it was definitely a very, very eventful day, and it has been an eventful week, and Del Toro is still wearing the pink jersey, which was not the plan of the UAE. It was definitely not the plan. So let's move on. I'll talk more about that when we get into the show. Mechanical Minute and Ron's tip for the week. What should I look for when I'm buying a bike helmet? Because bike helmet was brought up in the very beginning of this, there's some controversy as to whether people really need helmets. There's some countries that you go to that are heavily into cycling and no one wears helmets. There's a lot of talk back and forth here, but we'll get a little bit more into that when we get into the show. But I did want to talk a little bit about bike helmets, because bike helmets, I think, are fairly important. It's an essential piece of gear when it comes to cycling safety, and you want to make sure you pick a helmet that fits properly, has good ventilation, a good retention system, and meets your cycling needs. Remember that a properly fitted helmet can make the difference between a minor injury and a serious one, and that is true. The statistics do show that. But the big thing is, what is your rate of risk as far as riding your bike goes? Just so you know, over running and walking, cycling is definitely a riskier sport. Not by a lot, but believe it or not, not by a lot, but it is a little bit riskier sport due to the fact that you could fall off your bike and have a head injury. But just so you know, it is only 1/10 as dangerous as ice skating, inline skating, or skateboarding. Interesting, huh? I thought that was kind of an interesting little stat, so I thought I would bring it up. So we're going to go on to, I have a piece I pulled off of Consumer Reports, which is a somewhat reputable place to get information about how you buy a helmet and what you do to go about buying a helmet. First of all, the price of the helmet is not necessarily the determining factor of whether or not the helmet's going to work or not. You can buy a very reasonably priced helmet and still have full protection that you need. Now, as you get up higher and higher and higher into the ranges, you are going to find that there are some more conveniences, maybe some more comfort issues that you're going to get as you go up. And really, this is a personal thing. You know, it's something that you really need to go somewhere where you can try on the helmet. I strongly recommend your local bike shop, of course. And also, the thing is, with the local bike shop, you're going to find that they're going to be able to help you with the fit. The fit is probably the most important part of the helmet. Yeah, you can get all different levels of helmets, once again, but if you don't wear it correctly, it's really not going to work. So it's super important. I see people wearing helmets where they have it tipped way back up on their forehead, so they have lots of forehead exposure. That's not going to help you. If you fall forward, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So we'll talk about that in a second. I also see people who put their helmets on backwards because they have not worn their helmet in a long period of time, and they assume that that was the way that it went on. Yeah, I've seen it all, folks. And then there's, if you are wearing a helmet that you have not worn for a very long time and you're assuming it's going to help you, chances are it's probably not going to help you as much as you think it is. So you do have to understand that helmets do wear out. They wear out only in the fact that, A, if you crash on them, you just replace it. You don't even think about it. It did its job. Good for it. Thank you, thank you. Goodbye, helmet. Make it into a planter. Do something with it. Who knows? Some companies will actually even take them back. But you definitely do not want to keep a really old helmet, because the styrofoam in the helmet actually becomes more and more dense. And when it becomes more dense, it sends more impact to your skull. So if you're wearing an old helmet and you think that you're going to get some protection when you hit the pavement with it, guess what? You're probably going to cause just as much trouble as you would have if you didn't have the helmet on your head, other than the fact that you won't have any scrapes. Anyway, let's go on down. Take a look at this. So the front edge of the helmet should be no more than 1 inch above your eyebrows. So that means we're talking, I am, because I am on video, I am actually putting my finger up above my eyebrow, but you can pretty much determine what 1 inch is. One way that I would help people with it when I was helping them at bicycle shops and doing fittings for helmets is I would say, if you look up as you're looking up with your eyes, looking up overhead, if you can't see the edge of that helmet, you do not have that helmet on right. So that's a really, really good way of seeing it. You know, I look up right now, I see the edge of my glasses right here. But if I had a helmet on at the right height, I would be able to see the very front ridge of the helmet. So no more than an inch above your eyebrows. With the straps fastened, push firmly on the front edge of the helmet. If it moves back, the straps are too loose. So once again, if you've got it properly fit and then you push up on the helmet from your forehead and then it slides further back on your head, you don't have it adjusted right. So you need to do that. Number two on my list, push the helmet side to side and front to back. Should be snug enough that the motion wrinkles the skin at your temples. That's sort of a way of doing it. Okay. I find that a lot of the new helmets with the new suspension systems in the inside of them are super easy to get a good fit with. A lot of them have either a little dial or a little crimpy piece in the back that you can pull in together, and you really kind of wrap the helmet, the whole interior of the helmet, around your head and give yourself enough space between that and the styrofoam. They're really quite nice. If you are wearing a ponytail, like I have right here, ponytails can alter your fit, so make sure you test the helmet using the hairstyle that you ride with. A lot of us who have longer hair tend to have our hair pulled back in a ponytail, or sometimes you have it pulled back in a braid or whatever, but you got to make sure that that helmet fits around that and that it doesn't end up pushing the helmet in the wrong direction. So make sure you get that fit just right. Or maybe you may want to make sure you adjust your ponytail so that it doesn't restrict the retention system of the helmet. Number four, to test that buckled chin strap is tight enough, open your mouth halfway. The helmet should press down on the top of your head as you do so. That's an interesting way of doing it. So yeah, as you move your jaw down, you'll feel the pressure on the top of the head. That's a nice snug fit. If that snug fit is too uncomfortable for you, then try sizing a different helmet, or you might want to slide the front and back straps back and forth. You can make adjustments with those with the retention system so that it doesn't feel like it's too terribly tight, but it should feel snug underneath your chin. Definitely should. The front and back straps should make a V that meets just below and forward of the ear. That's what I always say. The retention piece that controls the front straps of the helmet and the back straps of the helmet, I like to line that little plastic piece up so that it falls right under the earlobe. So that's a great spot. And then you grab the back and tip and try to pull it up over your head to the front. The front of your helmet, if the front of the helmet slips down, shorten the back straps. So you really just want to make it so it doesn't rock back and forth on your head. You want to make sure it's a firm enough fit so that should you unfortunately have the chance to use that helmet, that it doesn't just slide back off your head or in a serious crash, you can find yourself tumbling or spinning or sliding, and you want to make sure that helmet stays right in place. So just in case you pop something while you're down there on the ground, you don't hurt yourself. So that's it. That's my tip of the week. Helmets, 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 helmets. Wear a helmet. Please wear a helmet. I like to see my friends that are able to, you know, speak coherently and tell me about their last cycling adventure. Even if it was a bad crash, they can at least still talk about it. So yeah, wear a helmet. It's a good idea. Do you wear a seatbelt when you drive a car? That's a good question. It became mandatory years ago, back when I was younger, than I am now. I used to be in cars that did not have seat belts, but that was a long time ago. So fortunately, it was deemed that seat belts actually save lives, that people that bounce around in vehicles when they're tipping and bouncing all over the place or crashing into things, they generally get hurt if they are in that vehicle without some sort of a restraint system. So therefore, seat belts became a mandatory thing, which was not a bad idea. Not a bad idea at all. So let's move on to the health benefits of cycling. Why? Because we talk about this a lot. Why do we talk about it a lot? Because it's really good for you. It really is. It certainly has been good for me. It has been probably more important than anything else in saving my life 4 years ago, in the fact that I was out riding my bicycle, and that's when I had a breathing issue when I was riding my bike, and thought, gee, that doesn't feel right, because I know what it feels like to feel right because I ride my bike a lot. But that sent me on into the medical world, and the medical world then there determined that that wasn't right and that I needed to get that checked out. And I ended up with a quadruple bypass, even though I am a very healthy guy. I didn't have a heart attack. I just, you know, my bicycle saved my life. So bicycling is good for your health, bicycling and lungs. Okay, so how do you thrive as you age? You like to bike? Your knees may thank you also. Really good for the knees. It's another one of those things. It can also be bad. You know, any sport that you do can be bad for you, as well as any sport that you do can be good for you. It all depends on the levels of the stress that you put upon your body while you are cycling. So, or running, or playing the favorite one right now is the pickleball craze. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Everybody loves their pickleball. I get it. I understand. But it's, to me, it's very, very hard on the knees. And I know people that have, you know, had some trouble with it because of that and have had to have some surgeries because of that. So, yeah, it's, you know, whatever. It is what it is. Let's talk a little bit more about the health benefits of cycling. This comes directly from People for Bikes, one of my favorite groups out there. peopleforbikes.org is the website that you would go to if you want to know more about it. They talk a lot about different things like infrastructure and policy and participation and just all things cycling, basically. So bicycling and your lungs. Despite the fact that cyclists breathe 2 to 3 times more air than motorists, motorists breathe about 60% more carbon monoxide and significantly more pollutants than cyclists do. How about that? What do you think? So here you are, you're out there breathing their exhaust, and they're getting more of it inside of their cars. And that is quite apparent if you get behind an older vehicle, and that older vehicle is spewing out all sorts of exhaust, and you have your ventilation system open to the outside in your car, and all of a sudden you start smelling the bad smells. And if you can smell the bad smells, that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing at all. So the exposure of cyclists, car drivers, and pedestrians to traffic-related air pollutants, that's a thing. And of course, you're better off to be outside of the car than you are to be inside of the car. 60% more carbon monoxide. That surprises me. The benefits of increased physical activity from shifting from driving to cycling, 3 to 14 months are gained on your age outweigh. that seems 3 to 14 months does not seem like a lot of time. Outweigh the effects of increased inhaled air pollution, or 0.8 to 40 days lost, and increased traffic accidents, 5 to 9 days lost. I guess this is out of your year, 3 to 14 months. So do the health benefits of cycling outweigh the risks? I would say Probably so. We'll talk a little more about that in a bit. Car spoilers. You know those funky little things that people put on the back of their cars because they're really insecure and they want to make their car look like a race car because they think they're a race car driver? Oops, I said it, didn't I? Anyway, you know what? The same people talk about me and my Lycra, so oh well. Oh well, we all have our opinions. Car spoilers tilted high in the air increased the exhaust reaching the head height of a cyclist and a pedestrian by as much as 57% compared to car spoilers tilted down. Amazing. So that came from a study back in 2011. Next on my list, bicycling to school improves children's cardiorespiratory fitness. Duh. Okay. Yeah. So experiences from randomized controlled trial on cycling to school, that's from a Scandinavian Journal of Public Health, published all the way back in 2012. And now, a study found that separated bike paths have better air quality than traditional bike lanes. So, you know how we're talking so much about infrastructure on the show and so much about how, boy, if we could just have protected bike lanes, guess what? They're not only safer, they're also healthier at the same time. That's kind of a cool thing. So, when a car travel restrictions, okay, when a car travel restrictions reduced morning traffic by 23% during the 96 Olympics in Atlanta, ozone concentrations decreased by 28%, and acute care visits for asthma decreased by 41%. Ride your bike, please ride your bike. Park the car, ride your bike, please. Bicycling to school improves children, yeah, we did that one already. Employees are less likely to cycle to work if their employer provides free car parking. More likely to cycle to work if their employer provides free bike parking and showers. How about that? That comes all the way back from a Mid-Atlantic University's Transportation Center survey back in 2009, Trends and Detriments of Cycling in the Washington, D.C. region. Urban cyclists are exposed to less accumulated air pollution than bus commuters. Study that went all the way back to 2008. Cycling and walking commuters have significantly lower levels of exposure to harmful pollutants like benzene compared with car commuters, and significantly lower levels of the pollutant NO2 than bus commuters. Wow, this it's just insane. Now, some of these studies are pretty old, so improvements could have been made in some of those other transportation systems by this time. But then again, if it's not regulated and if it's not enforced, maybe not. Cyclists are exposed to less pollution than taxi or bus passengers. It's another survey that was out. On the same urban route, car drivers were exposed to more airborne pollution than cyclists, despite the cyclists' higher respiratory rates. Respiration rates, excuse me. Kids who ride a school bus inhale up to a million times more vehicle emissions than the average person outside of the bus. Buses are good. Don't get me wrong. They're definitely good, better than putting, 10, 15, 20 more cars on the road versus the number of people that could ride on the bus, for sure. But to think of the fact that you get more pollution from riding on the bus than you would if you just rode your bike. Why do you ride to work? A new study found that biking to work burns as much fat spending 40 minutes at the gym 5 days a week. How about that? As a bonus, you don't have to pay for a gym membership. That's kind of a cool thing. A new research demonstrates that daily bike commuting also delivers, I just lost my screen here. a greater, higher quality of life and greater satisfaction with their health than public transportation users, walkers, and motor vehicle users. How about that? Commuters to the McGill University in Montreal were more satisfied with their commute if they cycled than if they drove and took transit, or even winter, or even in the winter, even in the winter. It just seems like kind of a no-brainer to me, but yeah, you got a much better frame of mind when you ride your bike to work. You know, when right now I'm a little restricted due to my health issues right now. I've got some which are going to be fixed very, very soon, by the way. It has been discovered that apparently I'm losing all my space in my neck, and that's why I have no power in the rest of my body. So anyway, we're going to get that fixed in about a month. I'm really excited about that. It's a kind of a major surgery thing, but, you know, I'll get through it. And I will report on it here on Bicycle Talk, of course, because I'm just an absolute open book about all this stuff. Ever since I had my heart issue, I find that the more I share, the more people reach out to me and say, hey, you know, I'm about to undergo that. And I'd really like to, you know, talk to you about that because you seem to have really bounced back nicely. Yeah, I ride my bike. That's it. You got to stay active. Stay active. Be active. Don't forget to be active. It's all very, very important. So 35% of participants in focus groups made up of African, African-American, and Hispanic Portland residents said that they did not have a place to store their bike where it would not get stolen. So that is why if you are actively participating in riding your bicycle to work and or to school, you need to have a conversation with the powers that be and make sure that you have a secure place to put your bike. It's a great place. Great thing. Just got to ask, that's all. The more you ask, the more information you will get from it. Over time, people who commute by car daily tend to gain more weight than those who do not, even if they are physically active at other times. That's scary. The average American bikes or walks an average of 20 minutes for exercise, 14 minutes for other purposes. A study of Texas commuters found that those with longer commutes were likely to get less physical exercise, have worse cardiorespiratory fitness, and be more overweight than those with shorter commutes. Huh. So that long commute that you have in your car, that you're kind of killing yourself. Here's an idea, and I know I've thrown this one out before. Drive your car half the way, ride your bike the other half of the way, or ride your bike in the last 10 miles, or ride your bike in the last 5 miles, and just park the car somewhere. So at least you get some health and fitness out of it too at the same time. Remember, shorter commute is better for you than a longer commute. Commuter cycling is a relatively low intensity, can increase physical performance, power, and oxygen uptake as much as specific training programs in men and women if repeated at least 3 times a week with minimal distance of 6 kilometers. Not very far at all. So how about that? And you know why? Because if you're commuting, you're probably not, you know, like charging around on your bike. You're just kind of riding at a little bit lower pace. What that's doing is it's putting your body into zone 2. Zone 2 means that you're working, but you're not working super hard. So you're bringing in oxygen, you're pushing it out, you're getting some physical exercise out of it, but it's better for you than the hard stuff. Oh boy, I'm learning more and more as I get older. The older I get, the better it is, because there's so much to learn. The overtime people also who commuted daily by car tended to gain more weight than those who did not, even if they were physically active. There's another part of that whole work thing. Kind of crazy, huh? In a study of 166 regular cyclists in Portland, Oregon, 60% cycled for at least 150 minutes a week, the federally recommended minimum activity level. And nearly all of the bicycling was for utilitarian purpose, not exercise. A disproportionate share of bicycling occurred on streets with bicycle lanes, separate paths, or bicycle boulevards. How much more do we have to talk about the work on that infrastructure, get things safe so you can ride your bike to run your errands and, you know, just use your bike instead of driving the car. Just, you can change your life if you do this. You really can. You can change everything about it. In a study of nearly 75,000 women, those who cycled for transportation were 35% less likely to die during I don't understand what that means. Okay. That one's kind of a weird. I don't understand that. Lifestyle physical activity like cycling for transportation is as effective as a structured exercise program in improving physical activity, cardiovascular fitness, blood pressure in previously sedentary, healthy adults. So you got that gym membership, right? And you don't really use it, but you ride your bike to the grocery store, you ride your bike to run errands around town, you ride your bike maybe even to work, and you're going to get more out of it than you are by not using that gym membership that you just bought. I got to be a little careful here because I am an instructor in a couple of local gyms, and so therefore I don't want to scare you away from the gym, because I think gyms can be really good for organizing people and getting people to participate in things that they wouldn't normally do. So there are some definitely good aspects to the gym, but if you don't use it, then it doesn't really work. Odd, isn't it? In a study of more than 30,000 people, those who bicycled to work were 40% less likely to die during a follow-up, regardless of how much physical activity they got outside of commuting. That would be, you're going to your physician. Leisure time physical activity alone may not be sufficient enough to prevent obesity, and additional energy expenditure through activity like active transportation is needed. It costs 3 to 4 times more to enroll a sedentary adult into a structured exercise program than to teach them how to integrate moderately intensive physical activity into their life, i.e. bicycling for transportation. Nice, huh? Commuting physical activity independent of leisure time physical activity is associated with a healthier level of most of the cardiovascular risk factors such as HDL cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, and triglycerides. One study found that professional women suffer mentally as a result of their commute, whereas men do not typically show commuting-related stress. That would be in your car, by the way, folks. So there's some great health benefits to bicycling, and this is why I am always encouraging you to ride a bike, because it's so, so good for you. And, of course, you know, Pedal and Ron has this... I have this opinion, which is very, very strong about it. And if everyone would just ride a bike, the world would be a much nicer place to live in. When you think about it, the car-centric societies that we have built around the big cities that are all over the world have changed the aggression of people and the behavior of people. And their sedentary lifestyle is also increased by spending too much time in the car. So it's really, really important that you get out and move. All you have to do is move. Move it or lose it, I think some people say. I have an expression that I've said for a number of years, play hard, play often, but don't forget to play. Figure out what it is that helps you and makes it so you want to play. My love was my bike. I fell in love with my bike when I was a little kid. I've never lost that. Sometimes I just go down and I look at my bikes. Sometimes I clean my bikes. You know, they're just like a special part of my life. And they've been so influential in everything that I've done in my life. So it is a lifestyle. And I remember having that conversation with a gentleman who came into my bike shop many, many years ago. And he said something about he was thinking of opening up a bike shop. He was actually purchasing a bike shop that had gone out of business because the owner had passed. And I looked at him and said, basically I told him, are you crazy? I said, you can't make any money in the bike business. You want to make money? And he goes, well, I'd love to make money. I said, yeah, you know, it's the bike business. It's not really a place you make money, but it is a great lifestyle. And that's what sold him. That's what sold him on it. It sold him all about the lifestyle. And it completely changed his life, and it changed his fitness, and it changed his relationship with his children. And I mean, the story is just success all the way. Be happy. Very, very important. So there's just a whole pile of things. If you go on to People for Bikes, I could go on this list forever, because there's just so many things, including, you know, a study of safe routes to school in 4 states, found that active travel to school increased by 37% after implementing the programs. You know, all sorts of great stuff in here. It's called Health Statistics, and it's in the People for Bikes .org website. So check it out. Very, very cool. And let's see. Let's move on. So you like the bike, and your knees will thank you, and you may live longer too. This one comes from the National Public Radio people, NPR. They said a large new study shows people who have less knee pain and arthritis than those who do not. How about that? So if you are prone to that, and I can tell you that I am totally prone to that, because my mom, she had 92 really great years and 2 not so good years. So she lived to 94, but she had really, really bad arthritis. And the problem with arthritis is, unfortunately, because of the pain, you don't want to move as much. But the real solution is you need to move more. And that really makes a big, big difference. So it's as Brooks Boliak, 65, an avid cyclist over the decades, says, it's definitely my longevity drug. He used to commute to his office on a bicycle. A substantial body of evidence supports that the health benefits of cycling, everything from strengthening the immune system to boosting the likelihood of living longer. And new study finds that people who are in the habit of riding a bike are significantly less likely to have osteoarthritis and experience pain in their knees by age 65 to people who don't bike. The study, which was founded in part by the National Institute of Health and published in the American College of Sports Medicine's flagship peer-reviewed journal, included about 2,600 men and women with an average age of 64 years old. They were surveyed about their physical activity over their lifetime. As a part of the study, researchers took X-ray images to evaluate the signs of arthritis in their knee joints. Bicyclers were 21% less likely to have X-ray evidence and symptoms of osteoarthritis compared to those who did not have a history of bicycling. Particular Dr. Grace Lowe of Baylor College of Medicine was surprised to see how very strong the benefit was. Lowe says the given profile of the participants and people enrolled in the study were not competitive athletes, but rather average people ranging from their mid-40s up to 80 years of age. All of them had elevated risks of developing knee arthritis due to weight, family history, or former injuries. The study could not prove cause and effect, and it was given an observational study that assessed osteoarthritis at one point in time. But the findings, which are published in the Journal of Medicine and Science and Sports and Exercise, validate the advice that many healthcare professionals providers give to patients about the benefits of cycling and other non-weight-bearing exercises. Cycling is very low impact. Cycling also helps build strength in the muscles around the knee and can help protect the joint. In addition, the rhythmic motion of pedaling on a bicycle can move the synovial fluid, the viscous egg white-like liquid in the joints that helps reduce friction and absorb shock. Wow, that's very, very cool. So, ride your bike. How many times do I have to tell you? It's bicycle talk. Ride your bike. It's really, really good for you. So risks aside, research shows that biking is good for longevity. There's good data to support that people live longer when they bicycle. There's a study that found that people who cycled 1 hour per week were about 22% less likely to die prematurely. That was a study of people with diabetes, so it's possible that the benefits are greater for people without that disease. Ah, big sigh. It's kind of a, you know, to me, it's kind of a DUH, you know, it's what it is. To me, it's obvious. I've spent my life on my bicycle, so it's super, super, you know, important to me and has been very, very beneficial to me too. And it is beneficial, like I'm about to have a major surgery and it's going to be beneficial to me as far as recovery goes because I stay very physically active. I was talking to a neurosurgeon because I'm going to be having some work done on my neck. And he looked at me and he said, you know, he said, you're in such great shape from all the cycling that you've done and all the physical activity you've done. He goes, you're going to recover from this really fairly quickly. And he goes, you know, you could get another 20 years. And I looked at him and said, only 20? Anyway, he did remind me that I would be 90 in 20 years and that that might be a possible, you know, deterrent there. But I said I was looking for more. So anyway, a bike helmet debate rages on as a study finds that drivers view cyclists wearing safety gear as less human. Couldn't help but leave this one alone. I just, can you believe this? People, a recent study found that drivers view cyclists as less human because they're wearing safety vests or bicycle helmets. The research could add fuel to the debate over whether the bicycle helmet mandates in the U.S. Many bicycling advocates argue helmet mandates make cyclists less safe for a variety of reasons. Anyone who's bicycled on a car-dominated street knows how unwelcome drivers can make them feel. Now, I don't care. If I'm riding in traffic, I got the helmet on. And if I therefore make someone upset who's driving a car and make them want to be more aggressive towards me because of it, that's not my problem. That's their problem. Basic measures a cyclist takes to protect themselves in the case of an accident could actually be hurting them. A recent study conducted in Australia by the academics at Queensland University and Flinders University found that bicyclists who wear helmets or safety vests might be putting themselves at more risk than they've done if they'd gone without the safety attire. Researchers found that cyclists wearing helmets or vests were viewed as less human and than those who did not have any safety gear. And they surveyed 563 people, asking them to answer the questionnaire using photos of people in both cycling specific attire and regular clothes to assess perceptions of dehumanization. 8 different photos, 4 of a man, 4 of a woman, showed a model standing with a bicycle while wearing either no safety gear, a baseball cap, a bicycle helmet, or a high visibility vest. Respondents also rated bicyclists on dehumanization scale, placing them somewhere between a bug and a human. Oh my God, you got to be kidding. And those who view cyclists as less than human are more likely to be a threat to cyclists on the streets. That a 2019 study found that respondents who rated cyclists as 89% human or less showed 1.87 times more direct aggressive behaviors to cyclists compared to respondents who rated cyclists as more than 90% human. give me a break. So now I'm less human because I wear a helmet when I ride my bike. I don't know where to go with this. I do know where to go with this. I'm going to blow right by it because I'll say it again. It's not my problem. It's your problem. If you see someone riding down the road and they've got bicycle equipment on to safely ride the bike down the road, the reason is because you're driving a giant behemoth vehicle and you're scaring the living daylights out of us. And we're just trying to protect ourselves just in case we do have that occasional impact with the vehicle. We hope we never do. We hope you're not aggressive enough to cause that problem, but yet I have had some serious conversations with people who are driving cars or trucks that have felt that I did not belong in their space. By the way, their space is also my space. I am transportation, and by the laws of my state, I do belong on the road, and you do need to share it with me, as I do with you. That's the way the law works. But remember, that person riding a bike could be a doctor, could be your doctor, the one that saves your life, could be a lawyer, could be your lawyer, the one that saves you a whole bunch of money at some point or makes you some money at some point. It could be a judge, the one who decides whether or not you should go to prison or not. Could be a police officer, another standing chance of you going to prison or not. It could be a nurse that's helping you in a hospital. It could be a teacher that's teaching your children. It could be a mother who has two or three children. It could be a father who has the same. It could be a grandfather. It could be a grandmother. It could be an aunt, an uncle. These are people, folks. These are people. These are not objects of threat to you when you're driving your motorized vehicle. They're just people. Anyway, I have to move on. I can't do it anymore. I'm going to the Giro. All right. Speaking of the Giro, let's go right to the Giro. Oh my gosh, the Giro. It's been a good one. It's been a really, really, really good Giro d'Italia. And on week three, we have that Sepp Kuss thing still going on here. Remember Sepp Kuss? Sepp Kuss, the guy from Durango, Colorado, who rode for, still rides for Visma Lease Bike. And he, in the Vuelta a España, got away on this long breakaway, and everybody kind of let the breakaway go because it was no big deal. I mean, there was just a bunch of domestiques out there, one of which was Sepp Kuss. And so they let him go. And when they let him go, they got so much time that all of a sudden now they had to start working for him, whereas he had been working for them all that time. Well, we got the same thing going on here with the UAE's Del Toro. Del Toro is a young Mexican cyclist. He's 21 years old. He is a phenomenally good climber, just an amazing climber. He's the real deal. He's a solid rider. Attacks are going against him. He's staying with them. He's really made a big difference in this Giro d'Italia, and not expected. He didn't expect to be there. But they let him go. They let him go in an early stage, and he got a lot of time. And now all of a sudden, there's this quandary. What do we do? What do we do? Do we protect him? You know, this is a team sport, by the way. If you're new to cycling and bicycle racing, it is very much a team sport, and people do work for one another. And his job was to work for their grand, you know, their big rider. But things got switched, so here we are, and he's still got a minute and a half. So, minute and a half of the week to go. What's the week to go? Oh, God, it's miserable. It's just going to be a really amazingly difficult time is what it's going to be. We'll see where it goes, but there are some stages coming up that are just mind-blowing. And this last week is going to be tough. Can Del Toro go the distance? These are the stages that will decide the Giro d'Italia. Historically, the hard final week puts Pink Jersey in peril as Del Toro takes on veteran climbers across 20,000 meters of mountain ascent. Final week opens with a beast of a mountain stage. Stage 16 features five climbs and nearly 5,000 meters of elevation gain, with the final ascent stretching 17.4 kilometers at an average of 6.4%. Stage 17 spices things up with the Mortorillo and the pre-finale before finishing downhill into Bormio. Stage 18 offers the fast men a rare chance to shine in the final week of the Giro, so it's going to be it's got a hilly middle section, but it's still got some chance for the sprinters at the end. Stage 19, on the other hand, wraps up after five climbs with a short descent to the finish line in the Monte Rosa Mountains, the second largest in Europe. The stage 20 heads into Sestieri with the steep and unpaved Col de Finistra, leading into the Giro's ultimate uphill challenge. Much of the route overlaps with the one where Froome staged his incredible comeback in 2018 to win the Giro. And of course, the final stage is a very flat stage that ends with a flat criterium in Rome. Stage 20, I've got the actual stages on my desktop here, and seemed like 19 and 20 were both just, well, actually 16's pretty ridiculous too. They all have these incredible hill profiles, and they are going to be crushing. If you are not paying any attention to bike racing at this time and you want to get turned onto it, this is the week to watch. I'm telling you, there are some massive, ugly days ahead of these guys. And this is the point where the 21-year-old could crack. It could happen, but we don't know. We don't know the capacity of this guy. We don't know what his, how long can he hold this kind of fitness. He certainly is fit. There's no question about that. It's been a lot of fun to watch him. He's pretty expressionless. He's not a truly big-time emotional rider like some of the others are, but man, this kid can ride a bike. Oh my God. He's just a whole lot of fun. I watched the final of Stage 15 the other day, and a domestique, one of the guys who has been working for his team for a number of years, all-around good guy, married with a couple of kids, just they all greeted him at the end. It was really cool. He got a chance to, he got in a break all by himself. He broke away and he held it, and he held it all the way to the finish. And I'm talking emotion here. I mean, these guys, they come across the line. They're literally crying when they cross the line, because it's such an incredibly heavy emotional experience for them. It's so cool to watch. I love bike racing. God, do I love bike racing. It's just a really, really cool sport. The amount of energy, emotional energy and physical energy that you have to put out to race a bicycle is, I don't know what you can compare it to. I really don't. I don't see it as much in other sports. Bicycle racing, especially Grand Tour racing, like what we're watching right now with the Giro and what's coming up with the Tour de France and what will be coming up with the Tour of Spain, the Vuelta a España. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. And some of these guys never, ever, ever get a chance to ever win a race. And then when something like this happens, because they were able to have a good day, and ride off the front, and people just let him go because, he's just domestique. He's just going to burn out there. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just have the ride of their life, and he had the ride of his life. It was fun to watch. I just love that stuff. You just can't get enough of it. And Carlos Verona, he did a solo victory, finishing stage 15, and it put a crunch on the team and the rankings and everything in as far as the race goes right now. So there's definitely a minute and 20 seconds between Isaac Del Toro and Simon Yates. They that's UAE Team Emirates and versus Team Visma. And then in third place is Juan Ayuso. And Juan Ayuso is on the same team as Isaac Del Toro goes. And this is where we run into the what are they going to do. They've got two riders that are really, really close to one another. And he's only a minute and 26 seconds down. And I tell you what, that can happen in a blink in mountains. Just a blink of the eyes, and that can go that way. In fourth place is Richard Carapaz, who's having one heck of a great race, but he's still 2 minutes down from the leader. But we're going to the mountains, folks. We're going to the mountains. Things are going to get really ugly and really exciting in this next week. So we will watch and we will see, and I will report back on it next week because the Giro will be over. Sad. The Tour de France is right around the corner. So, yeah, we still got more excitement and more bike racing to come. And that's just the way it is. It's great, great stuff. So, let's see here. In events, I just have a few things here to mention. Our friends out... Let's back up. Our friends up in the Southbridge area, the Tour... The Southbridge Credit Union Tour of Opacum, O-P-A-C-U-M, Bike Ride for Land Conservation, is that ride is on September 21st for a spectacular scenic bike ride through several of their conservation properties in Brimfield, Sturbridge, Monson, and surrounding towns. Really pretty there. It's like here, like where we live in northeastern Connecticut. Really, really pretty. And so the Land Trust protects critical land, water, and wildlife and provides outdoor spaces for everyone to enjoy. So you might want to check that out. I told them I would help them promote it. Eurobike is coming up on June 25th through June 29th. So we've got the, just before the Tour de France, there is Eurobike. And that's in Frankfurt, Germany. It's a big bike show. And of course, National Bike Month is almost over, but it doesn't mean you have to hang up that bike. Let's go. Let's get out there. So anyway, what did you do for Bike Month? Hopefully you rode your bike a lot. Let's take this clip from our friends from the League of American Bicyclists. I love to end my show on this. Bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. The League is making bicycling easier and safer option for more people because when more people ride bikes, people are happier, healthier, and our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can change the world. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active, our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike and do your part. And hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Consider parking that car for one day, just one day for a week, in a week, okay? And ride your bike instead. You might just surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving a car, please be safe and kind. And the views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station, but you have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can comment below. If not, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Run. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week.